Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Welcome to the latest United We Stand podcast. My name's Andy Mitten. And this podcast, as with a couple of others we're going to do during the international break, is we're going to speak to some writers. Today we're going to speak to John Paul O'Neill. He's got a book coming out. John Paul is well known among Manchester United fans and FC United fans. He edited Red Issue for a long time. And he's written a book called Red Rebels, which is published by Yellow Jersey, and it comes out on the 21st of September, priced $14.99. This podcast is sponsored by RedArmyBet.com. Have a look on the website for the latest odds and offers, the special offers for Manchester United fans. That's RedArmyBet.com. John Paul, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, no problem, Andy.
We've been sent questions in for you. From United We Stand readers, I've got some questions myself. I've known you for a long time, and I was interested when I heard that you were doing a book, and I've read most of the book, and I found it very interesting, quite sad, quite happy, but interesting nonetheless. Why have you done a book? Why have you done it now? Tell people what it's about.
It was actually a person at Penguin who came up with the idea, and we got wind of it through our Red Issue connections last November, that this was on the table, and they were trying to find someone to write the book. On following that, I got in touch with the agent, or one of the agents who was offering it around, and from there I had to write a short sort of brief of what I put in the story that they were looking to be told. And following that, I went down to London and had a meeting with both the agent and the commissioning director at Penguin.
It's a book about FC United. It's a book about FC United.
Yeah, they wanted the history of FC United, but I think to tell that, you've got to say where the club came from. So a lot of that tied into Manchester United in the early 2000s. With the whole Sergio Coolmore stuff, and from there the Glazer takeover. And so that's a big part of the book. Obviously, FC United came out of the protests against the Glazer takeover in May 2005, with it being set up that summer. So why now? That's the reason why now. And what was your other questions, guys?
Why? Why are you doing it? Why have you done the book? And what's it about? I think you've answered all those three points. FC was your idea originally. You mentioned it in Red Issue.
During the whole that season 2004-2005, there was a lot of things going on, and there was a lot of doubts in terms of would the Glazers bid, would they not bid, would they see it through, would they get sort of stalking United, trying to make a quick bulk up or the share price rising and cashing out. I mean, you've done that in the past thing with Harley Davidson when they were investing in that, and they ended up in court in America. There was a lot of doubts around it, and there's certainly doubts around who was going to finance it, with like JP Morgan involved and pulling out at the time of the AGM in November 2004. When it was like the Glazers were going to launch a hostile bid for the club. Well, on the back of that, they came back in February with, when there was all talk of a new bid. They were coming again. They wanted to do due diligence on United's books to see how the finances worked and everything else. And it was just an idea to throw a bit more doubt in the mix that if there was this alternative club, could they rely on Old Trafford still being full? Because that was one of the biggest things. They were coming to take the money that was offered by virtue of the club's loyal support, as well as Fergie being seen as a pretty much cast iron guarantee of success. But that deal had two sort of pillars on which the bid was based, or any bid would be based. And because of that, we're just looking to undermine it in any way we could. The FC United idea was just to, throw that down into the mix, but they wouldn't have any idea how many people might go that way and say, right, we're going to be treated as customers, we'll take a customer elsewhere if that's what you're going to come for. So, given that, when it was the takeover actually went through, and it was mid-May when it happened, there wasn't much time to do anything about it. Yet, the way it had been presented and everything, obviously, was that this would be happening in the event of the takeover. But because it was so late in the day, with regard to the following season coming round, and league AGMs, the North West Counties AGM, and the England Premier League AGM, and sort of, well, how are we going to manage to put a football club together in 4 or 5 weeks before that? Even when the takeover went through, it's like, well, it's too late, we can't do it now, we're just going to have to wait a year, if anything. But eventually, we just thought, well, let's go for it, and that's what we did.
So you started a football club up from scratch. I should declare an interest. My brother was one of the first signings. He dropped down a few divisions to play for FC, and I think he thoroughly enjoyed his season there. And I watched him several times when he was playing there, and there was a feeling of euphoria, and I think you get that across in the book. And some of the crowds were astonishing. I can remember going to one game against Winsford at Gig Lane, and there were over 4,000 people there. And I knew a lot of Manchester United fans, lads I'd seen at the game for many, many years, including some close friends of mine, who they were going everywhere with FC United. I was amazed that they stopped going to United and started going to all FC games. But as the years went on, the numbers seemed to decline, the euphoria seemed to decrease. I didn't follow it as closely as people who were involved did. My brother wasn't playing there anymore. Did a rot start to set in early? What happened? Or was that just a club maturing and becoming more of a normal football club as the early enthusiasm wore off?
Yeah, I think there's a bit of that. I mean, you've got to remember in 2005-06 that season, it was brand new. Everyone's jumping on the bandwagon, if you like, because they wanted to see what it was all about, see what's happening. And you saw that in some of the crowds. The following season, the average crowd dropped by maybe 500. And it did the second year after that as well, so it dropped by 1,000 in 2 years. But then the FC's average crowd settled about 2,200, which was more than respectable for the level the club was playing at. But in terms of those first couple of years, certainly there was a lot of people going, but it was a novel experience. It was, and it was, like you say, it was euphoric that first season in a lot of ways. People were enjoying themselves, but obviously it's only a novel experience as long as it's novel, isn't it? So once people experience it all, then you might get tired of it. Because like you say, some of the lads, well, we were going, generally, they'd have to sit in the pub and watch United on the telly, so I presume a lot of them went back to doing that sort of thing. But also, the Gig Lane factor, that you can't underestimate that. If FC had ended up playing within Manchester within 18 months, 2 years of starting, I think crowds would have held up a lot more than they did. They would have attracted a lot more support on the back of that. But just Gig Lane every second week, it's just the back of the unreal, isn't it? To a large extent.
There was a lot of scepticism around when the Glazers took over. There were a lot of people saying that this is not going to last. The way they've structured the debt is unsustainable. 12 years on from FC and both the Glazer takeover, I'm surprised at how it's worked out for the Glazers. I'm surprised at the amount of money coming in. The protests have died away almost to nothing. How do you see it? Are you surprised how it's all panned out, first of all, with the Glazers, and then we'll talk more about FC?
Well, I think you've got to look at it from at least two viewpoints, because United still part of the Premier League, and all right, maybe not in the last sort of three seasons, but a pretty much staple in the Champions League as well. The biggest proportion of the club's income comes from the TV deals on both of those. Now, all right, United are part of that, and sponsors and everyone else are buying into it to get the respective glory off clubs like United, Barcelona, Real Madrid, and everyone else. So, to that extent, United have influenced that, but otherwise, it's out of the Glazers' hands how that revenue's increased. And obviously, this Premier League centralised pot that's gone up to 100 million per club per season, minimum. So, alright, they've increased money with all these sponsorship deals off the pitch, all these partners, sausage partners, or whatever else it is, Far East. You've got Nigeria, Saudi Arabia, all these sponsor deals, and that's when the Glazers' own people have come in and done stuff. But they've only really copied the blueprint of Formula One and I suppose American football to a certain degree. And you know, fair play to them, they've done it and increased revenues, and it's great. But where does that leave the ordinary fan? And that's the one other aspect that we really want to open up. Okay, they haven't been 2010, perhaps 2010, 2011, but that's because they took it, the demand prices up to such an extreme that they couldn't really go any further.
What about you? Did you stop going to Old Trafford? When was the last time you saw a game at Old Trafford? I've seen you at away matches. How did the takeover affect your support of Manchester United? Did you watch games on television, or did you just throw yourself wholeheartedly into supporting FC?
Well, I mean, I'm still a United fan. But I mean, I gave up a season ticket because throughout that season, 2004-05, many of us said, we won't be customers, we're not customers, we're football fans, we won't be treated by these chances coming in, just take people's money and ramp ticket price, which they did, and you saw the knock-on effect at the end of the 2005-16, there was loans, people gave up, but they didn't give up, they were priced out. I mean, I remember being at Christian in October 2005, good mate of mine, and his mum and dad used to go everywhere, and they were well known, taking at a match, and your mate's mum was just going on at me, yes, look, that's the rule, you can't do that, you can't do this, and just slagging the whole idea off. Anyway, at the end of that season, they priced out, they gave the tickets to the episode because they said they couldn't afford it. And inside, you know, part of me had a little chuckle about it, thought, well, you know, what were you saying a few months ago, but it's sad because so many people were priced out, and but I wasn't necessarily. I could have still afforded it, but I gave him season ticket because that's what we said. That's what we pledged. Not one penny, you know. Sales United, they ran a whole campaign on that. Not one penny, and that's something more important. You can't be taken for a fool. And just, I mean, how much did it look in those first 5 years? There's so many people priced out, and that's why the crowd changed so much from sort of 2007 to 2010.
Ticket prices definitely shot up pretty substantially for those first 5 years, as you say. They've since plateaued. They're not going up anymore. Clubs don't have the same pressure because of television money. And there's definitely been other shifts. I've seen people who went to FC United, they've started coming back to Old Trafford. Some people did both. And the reasons are varied. One fella said to me that my son wants to watch Manchester United more than he wants to watch FC United. And then there are other reasons for the way that FC United was being run. Clearly Manchester United's not perfect. But as you read your book and get deeper and deeper into it, and it becomes clear that FC need their own ground, and there are a lot of obstacles along the way to getting the new ground. And finally, the new ground opens in at Broadhurst Park with a game against Benfica's B team. And I knew people close to FC, including yourself, who were there at that night, and that seemed to be, and I might be reading it wrong, the high. You've done it, you've built your own ground, you've got a massive crowd for it, the ground looks really nice, it's in a part of Manchester which will probably appreciate the investment, the support, season ticket prices are still low. And then what happened next, it seemed to implode, and you're one of the reasons why, because you started highlighting what you perceived was to be malpractice, mispractices going on. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, it's to a degree. I mean, the biggest problem was the fact that the ground ended up being mustard. That's nothing, no slight on mustard. It was because the first sort of location that was investigated was in Newton Heath, 10 Acres Lane, about a mile from the fitness ground just off Oldham Road, where there was a leisure centre with a football pitch and everything else. And the club were in talks with the council, and a big deal was set up for FC to have that site and develop it as a football stadium. Now, the council were also partners with the Arabs who own the city. And when it suddenly came out, the FC had spent about £400,000 doing the plans and everything else, the preliminary work for the stadium being at 10 Acres Lane. And then the council announced a deal with Manchester City owners about developing around East Manchester, and suddenly they pulled the plug on 10 Acres Lane. Now, it was strongly suspected by a lot of people that was because they didn't want another club on their patch, so to speak. Even though it's, I don't know exactly how far it is, but it's about a mile away, perhaps. And so FC got turfed. 10 Acres Lane was given over to something else. And basically the council said they'd try and help FC develop another site. And that site ended up being Muston. But the thing was, 10 Acres Lane was only due to cost about £3.5 million to develop. By the time Muston, the groundbreaking came on the Muston site, judicial review due to protest the local residents against having this football ground in their area. Other plans has gone up, and suddenly you talk about £6 million rather than £3.5 to £4 million. And so that's what's really caused a lot of issues with the extra finance that's required. And yeah, obviously the ironic thing is now FC is in a massive amount of debt relative to its annual turnover. And that was obviously the thing that everyone was protesting about, that the Glazers were doing at Manchester United back in 2005.
So the club are in debt. There's clearly been problems there. Are you optimistic about the future of FC? And one of the readers wants to know, would you consider putting yourself forward to stand on the board yourself?
Optimistic. It depends. I mean, the club's obviously facing huge pressures at the moment. And there's a lot of issues there that still need sorting out. I mean, it's on far better ground than it was 12 months ago. That's because a new board's been voted in and most of them are doing a good job. And there's a new CEO who's replaced Andy Walsh. And there's hope for the future, but the thing with finance, it could change at any moment, can't it? And obviously the main thing that underpins a football club is results on the pitch and performances on the pitch. Team playing well, going to get crowds through the gate, everything pretty much looks after itself, doesn't it? So, I mean, FC's had a bad start to the season, lost first 3 on the bounce, was it? But last 3-4 results have not been too bad, so hopefully it'll come together a bit and things will turn around. In terms of standing for the board, I mean, that's a good question. I have no doubt that I would have some positives to bring if I did, but you know, it's obviously not my call anyway. You'd have to be voted in. Whether I do or not, I don't know. I've got a lot of things coming up, a lot of diversions. So if there's a groundswell of attention, then I might consider it, but I don't see that coming anytime soon.
So you say that, and it leads into another question we've had sent in, which is you highlighted a lot of good points about the problems at FC, but you turned a lot of people off by doing it in such an aggressive style. Is that a fair point? Or did you feel that you needed to do that?
Well, it depends what people mean by an aggressive style, but the one thing that certainly happened was back in 2015, the vast majority of FC fans, everything was great. The ground's built, they've had Benfica playing in front of a sell-out crowd, 4,200, whatever it was. The team's just won the league, got promoted to the Conference North. So, what are the issues? People only want to look as far as the success, really. You have to sort of start digging to see what we've done. It's very hard to start telling people, well, actually, the whole structure's rotten here. When all they can see is the ground, promotion, the championship trophy, everything else. People don't want to listen, so because of that, I was getting loads and loads of stick to just pointing these things out that were going wrong and that were being done badly. And I came in for dogs abuse, of course I did, but I knew it would. That goes in the therapy, that goes in the position, so I wasn't complaining. But certain people didn't like things being pointed out and start screaming bullying and abuse, just questioning them. And that became the mantra of Andy Walsh and all his acolytes throughout the following season. Any questioning of what they were doing, anything that was being pointed out about how the club was in a bad situation or whatever, it was bullying and abuse. It wasn't legitimate questions by members, owners of the club. It was bullying and abuse. And then eventually when people realised that this was just what was being thrown at anyone, whoever they were, asking anything or saying whatever they any sort of question with Andy Walsh, that they were a bully, they were being abusive, and everyone suddenly realised how ridiculous it all was, and you saw the weight of opinion change.
You continued to do Red Issue until the start of 2015, if I'm not mistaken, and then you called a day on it with Red Issue. Do you regret that, or do you feel that you made the right decision at the time to stop doing a long established and successful fanzine?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the takeover happened, and to some extent, there's a big decision to make there whether to carry on, because Red Issue, myself, others involved, we took such a strong stance against the takeover, what it meant to the club. And just to tie in to the point you brought up earlier, but people think the Glazers are a genius now because of how it's panned out and there's all this revenue rolling in and everything else. But it's just a matter of time, as far as I'm concerned, because they had to refinance twice. And because they got the first refinancing through in sort of 2006-07, before the global financial crisis, that's how the club's come out of everything to be in a position that it is today. Liverpool's owners did a very similar thing, Hicks and Gillette. They didn't refinance in time, and we all saw how they owned up to end it up. They were forced to sell, and you had the Boston group come in and take over. And that could easily have been United, but United would have been in a worse, far worse situation. That was what all the warnings were about. That's what all the protests were about. So anyway, back to Red Issue. In terms of carrying them funding on it after the takeoff, well, it was a bit hypocritical, because obviously I've been up season ticket, but at the same time, still United, so I'm still going away again, still going Europe. So, in terms of that, well, why should we still have that stay in the club? So we carried on. But 10 years later, and the way football's gone in that 10 years, I just had enough of it, it's doing it. I mean, I try to put my finger across in that final editorial and explain the situation, but it's just that you feel less and less part of football as a whole each passing year, just because of how it goes. And it's all about money, it's all about finance, and it's less and less a sport. I mean, you've only got to look at how Woodward's taken the club in the last few years. There's concern about the biggest trending name on Twitter as they are whether they have the trophy at the end of the season. At least it seems like that. I mean, the way transfers are announced and the emphasis put on breaking no records for transfers and everything else, well, what does that matter? Win football matches, that's what sport's about.
What are your thoughts on another non-league football club which has had a very high profile in recent years in Greater Manchester, Salford City? I think Curzon, I mean, my brother used to play for Curzon, and they have done incredibly well to get into the Conference North, National League North, and stay there. I know they've got a new ground, but they're not a big club, and they're playing against teams in the same league as FC, who are full-time, who've got wealthy benefactors. And I thought of Curzon the other day when Manchester United drew Burton Albion, and I thought, if I had to pick two clubs out in English professional and semi-professional football who are punching above their weight and shouldn't be where they are, Curzon Ashton and Burton Albion will be those teams. But Salford City is obviously a very different ownership model. What's your take on Salford and what they're doing?
Salford, I mean, good, big ambitions, haven't they? Good luck to them. I just find it incredibly amusing how all these people, and I saw them all 2005, 2006, 2007, raging against FC, the whole concepts of it. Judas scum, you can't turn your back on your football, all these other nonsense lines that they came out with at the time. Gary Neville, Ryan Giggs, turn up at Salford. Oh, they're down there watching Salford City without any sort of hint of embarrassment about what they said previously. So, all right, fair enough, that's what we want to do, but go and do it. But just with the hypocrisy of so many United fans who've jumped on that bandwagon, it's just ridiculous. But good luck to them.
I can remember trying to get people who would end up being involved in FC United near the start to come to a game of non-league football before 2005, because my family's always played it. I've always been watching it since watching my dad's and my uncle's, and it was really hard. It was really, really hard. They had no interest whatsoever into it, and there was a mixture of reactions after that when they started going to FC, and it was like, we've been missing out on this all of the time. I can't believe we were so arrogant in not looking at some of the smaller clubs on our doorstep. What do you like when you go to non-league football? And do you miss going to Old Trafford? Do you miss anything about Old Trafford? Because I'm assuming you've not been inside Old Trafford post 2005.
I've been in Old Trafford a couple of times, yeah. And that's why I don't miss it. Because I've seen it since... I went to one game last season. I was invited in a box. I've never been in a box at Old Trafford. And I just thought, yes, why not? I'll go. I've enjoyed a freebie, have a good day out. And it was a good day, but I'll tell you what, I wouldn't like to go to a box every week anyway. But it was, I don't know, it's changed, hasn't it? And it's not the same as well. So you don't miss. I'd rather home games, I'd rather watch in the pub with my mates, because you've got no mind, you've got no aggro, got no police filming you, no steward telling you what to do, no idiots sat around with lots of traps, but it depends what pub you're going. In terms of going Old Trafford, no, I don't really miss it anymore. I miss what it was, of course I do. Yeah. I miss what it was and what it meant and everything else, but I don't miss what it is now.
Another question from a reader is, City of Liverpool FC seems to more or less be a copy of FC United's model in many ways. If they ask you for advice, would you give it to them?
Yeah, of course you would. Because ultimately, the sort of people who would be behind them, well, I'm guessing, would be Liverpool Everton fans who have themselves been priced out, alienated from the clubs. We go to Anfield, there's more tourists at Anfield than there are at Old Trafford. It's embarrassing. And yet, and it's, what is it, 25,000 smaller capacity, so it's much higher proportion there. And yet, you hear it as probably more so from scouts about how alienated Premier League football makes them these days. Lifelong football fans, you've got more in common with them. So why would you not help them? If they wanted advice and what to do, you'd help them out. As far as I'm concerned, you would anyway.
Another question from a reader is, how can you follow, support and love anything other than the team you grow up following as a kid? I will never understand that. Surely it's unconditional. And someone else sent another question in, which is broadly similar, so I might as well raise the point. Did you ever stand on the Stretford end and sing, "We'll support you"?
Yeah, I saw that question. He's seen a bit in Alan Partridge where he meets his stalker. And he's got all the pictures in his bedroom with Alan Partridge. That's how I feel with that guy. He's obsessed with me, I'm sure he is.
I don't know who's asked it, actually. I've just copied the questions rather than asked them. But I think that the point is that you can't stop supporting a football team. And that was a criticism.
I don't know any SC fan who does say they stop supporting United. And surely, if these people... If it come back to Salford, it's interesting how it only ever gets asked of SC fans. It never gets asked of Gary Neville or Ryan Giggs. But do they not want Salford City to do well, just the same as an FC fan wants their feet to do well? But no one ever says, "Oh, hang on, you're not a United fan anymore." To them, do they? So it's very specifically directed, all this, and it's just really.
Another question, or it's more of a point, and this is from a reader who says, at risk of opening up a huge can of worms, I personally can't see how anybody can look at the atmosphere at Old Trafford on a regular match day or at more general developments in football and say that those who founded FC United did not have a point. I mean, the atmosphere, when I used to go to see my brother, I probably went 6-7 times in that first season. It was brilliant, and part of me was envious at the thing that was going on there. And I took in a lot of views from FC United fans there, and people were saying, you know, there are exaggerations, I think, on both sides. People were saying Old Trafford's dead now, and I didn't feel it was dead. I didn't feel that every single vocal United fan had left, although clearly a lot did. What's the atmosphere like now at FC United matches?
It's not as good as it was in those first few seasons. No, of course it's not, but and I think that a lot of that's the novelty, the sort of anger and rage dying down a bit because it's, you know, time moves on. It's the changing of the crowd at FC as well, because it has changed and evolved over the last 12 years. You've also got... Old Trafford's atmosphere. You made the point quite often about, well, when the fun being first started in 1989-90, people moaning about the atmosphere at Old Trafford then. And that's a legitimate point, but at the same time, it was only £3 to get in Old Trafford then, and you could stand with your mates. So even if it was, the atmosphere is no good, you'd be surrounded by 20 mates all having a laugh on the terrace or whatever. And so it wasn't as big a deal if it was. People wanted the atmosphere to be rocking every week. But when the atmosphere is no good and you sat in your seat, you can't move, and you might have one mate next to you there, but a bunch of clowns slagging whoever else behind you. It's different, isn't it? And you're paying £50 for the privilege. So that's the whole atmosphere thing. I know traffic has been great on occasion, but I mean, how many times in the last 12 years? It's probably once a season these days, isn't it? Barcelona 2008, Chelsea 2005. Games like that, and if, I don't know, the singing end, people wanted that, it's come in, has it made much of a difference? People who, well, you've been in a much better position to tell me, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'm quite defensive over some of those people because I think they are trying, but they're swimming against the tide. There's not enough of them. There's a lot of cynicism around it, which I can understand. But I see people putting their hard-earned in, making nice flags, and they do the same at FC United, some brilliant flags there. And I went to Broadhurst Park for the first time in April, and I actually thought the atmosphere was really good, even though everyone was saying the football's not as good as it should be. I thought the ground was good. I was struck by how few people are recognised, because I think 10 years ago, you knew most of the people there because they were from Manchester United, and I think the atmosphere debate will go on and on. It just really depresses me when I go to somewhere abroad and watch a game, and it's miles, miles better than anything I see in England. It's just a different league. And you've watched football in South America, you've watched football in Europe, and I'm just envious when I watch it. And I think there's so many good football fans in Manchester, whether they're United, City, FC United, brilliant football fans who are so loyal, who go absolutely everywhere and support their team. And yet I see St Etienne come to Old Trafford and I just think, wow, I'm just in awe of it. I'm just envious of what they've got. Because as a kid, it was brilliant.
To a certain extent, I mean, St Etienne, I'm sure, it's not rocking every week there. In fact, someone called them up the other day and was telling me they were on holiday in France and they went to a game there and it was just pretty dead. But at the same time, what you've got to realise is that in Europe, well, some countries in Europe, certainly South America, there's a very different demographic who go to the games, and ultimately football, it's a young lad's pastime. And you look at what was it, Oxford Army, they're all 12, 13, 14, 15 year olds, aren't they? They're not 45, 50, like most of Old Trafford is these days, pretty much. If they're not tourists, they're sort of 45, 50, aren't they, really? And you're not going to get 45, 50-year-olds to around creating a din on a Saturday afternoon. They go there, they fit in the suit, and they're happy to do so, by and large. And that's the thing. It's like, years ago, you'd have young kids act up, make can use themselves, sing and shout. That's what they do. That's what we do together. That's what tennis is all about. That's when you get the whole club feel and identity. That's what the togetherness on the terrace. And that's why you still get it in South America, bouncing, and certain countries in Europe. But when it's 50 quid a ticket, Old Trafford, 40, 60 quid, kids aren't going to be there because they don't have that sort of money unless they're taken by their dad. And certainly, the older people aren't going to be the sort of people who create noise, create atmosphere, are they? And that's why you only get one, two games a season, because it's when they're really up for it in a European semi-final or equivalent game title decider that those sort of people will get up and be passionate about it, because that's what it comes down to, about passion, isn't it?
There are a group of people doing the bit. I know they were frustrated with the manager's comments after the Leicester game, but I'm going to go in the pub with him before a forthcoming game, record a podcast. Another question, it's about you, and you are a figure of intrigue for some people. How did you feel about your portrayal in the book Scum Airways, is the question. And he said, the bit that sticks in my mind was when the author followed you out to Thailand and sat down with you for a bit and described how intelligent you were. This was not long after an incident where you'd confronted a lad for singing Who the Fuck Are Man United. Was that an accurate portrayal of you?
I didn't realise it was a portrayal of me. Are you sure, Andy?
And the next question was, what was your first experience of seeing disorder at a football game?
There seems to be a scene, mate. I'm not sure why. Disorder at a football game.
I'll tell you mine then, right? I can remember when I was 13 or 14, the whole Stretford end singing to Chelsea fans about, you're going to get your head kicked in. There's 5,000 or 6,000 Chelsea fans behind the goal. And I actually thought, shit, this is going to be real trouble here. I'm waiting for the bus outside the 255 opposite the Chippies at the top of the road and seeing Chelsea escorted across the top of the road. And I was in awe of them. It was every game, this huge away following going past with stragglers coming off. And as a young kid, you're just like, it just seemed very, very exciting. And then when you start going to away matches and you're getting off a train or you're getting off a coach and you're on enemy territory and you walk into the game, and it's just very, very exciting. And people obviously go in different directions, but you've been going to the match a long time and I'm sure you've seen some incidents of disorder yourself. Where's the worst place you've been? Have you ever been frightened when you've been at a match?
Not so much frightened, no, but there was certainly Newcastle in the 90s, that was a dodgy place to go. when we were 1-0 in 96, because we only ever had about 500, 600, 700 tickets maybe, didn't we, at Newcastle. And in the 90s, they seemed to hate us like nothing else. And we'd always get a train up, just sort of 5-6 of us, maybe a few more, depending on how many, how confident people were of getting in, shall we say. But yeah, that night game was, you know, all the Geordies were outside after crying, weren't they, and looking to exact some revenge. But the '99 was probably the dodgiest time, to be honest, because we had two separate ends. So they sort of 700 tickets, 800 tickets maybe that year. They were either side, they were sort of on each corner flag, and so there weren't many United fans going round towards the train station. I just remember three of us walking out, and all around us with Geordies saying what the day is before a United fan, and there was just three of us in the middle trying to get round to get meet up with a few of the other lads so we could walk back to the train station. But yeah, Newcastle always games like Leeds, you know, they always have loads of fans out, wouldn't they? But with a United fan, you never felt in much trouble, just because United have always been able to look after themselves, haven't they? But those games in the North East, when you've got tiny little allocations, Newcastle, they stand out, I think.
I remember stepping off a coach, and I was stewarding the coach to Newcastle in 94 in a League Cup game. And they parked up close to the way, and I stepped off onto the pavement, and this Geordie just swung for me and whacked me. He said, "Where's your feeters?" Which I assume meant, where are your fighters? And I was told that the FA Cup game in 1990, fifth round, was very, very rough. I went to the following round at Sheffield United, but Middlesbrough away in the League Cup semi-final in 92, I counted or got told or researched or whatever, 96 coaches that day. That was the biggest ever number of coaches for a United away game, aside from a semi-final or a final. And probably there wasn't a lot of trains going up to Middlesbrough, and certainly not coming back after the game, but it was bloody rough up there. Newcastle was rough, and I really like Newcastle as a city. And I think Newcastle United are a great football club, and I followed them away to Cardiff in April and wrote a piece on it, and my uncle was manager there. But you're right, going up to the North East in the early 90s could be dangerous, and Leeds as well. I got a whack at Leeds. I think I only had a couple of whacks at the match, and Newcastle was one of them, and Leeds was another. You've never been scared, you mean that?
I don't quite know what you're getting at here, Andy, but...
I'm not getting
anything. That Newcastle game is probably the most, just because if we'd been run more, the three of us in that, under that stand as we walked around the ground, there wouldn't have been much left of us, but... the thing is, at the match, you know what's going to happen. You go for so long, and you know how people react, what's any given situation, how it's going to develop. And once you know that, there's nothing really to be scared about, because you know what's going to happen. So,
the next question is, if you were mayor of Manchester, what changes would you bring about to make the city a better place? And maybe that has been asked because you linked to a very good article talking about the homeless problem in Manchester quite recently.
Yeah, I didn't write it. I think what you have to do, you bring people like that in who grassroots, they know what's going on. They're in tune with what's happening on the street. And rather than just dictating from on high about what should happen, certainly that's one of the biggest visual issues, that when people are walking through Piccadilly, they see these things, all the people in the streets on this spice. Again, you could be there here all day talking about it, but it stems from the criminalisation of the drug in the first place, which was needlessly done, tabloid hysteria, and it just snowballs from there, doesn't it? Like a lot of issues.
What would you do if you met a member of the Glazer family?
Well, there's a passage about that in the book.
Was that in China, in Beijing?
Yeah. Well, there wasn't a lot to do with for Beijing's police force outside, because we were more fucking into the bus, to be honest. So, I mean, I suppose you're talking about these days. I've been off, to be honest. I see, saw a picture a few years ago now of one person who's been quite prominent in his voicing and displaying his displeasure at the Glazers, and he was in a hotel on the pre-season tour, got on a list, and he asked for a selfie with him, and put it this way, I certainly wouldn't be asking for a picture with him. So
people are weird sometimes. I knew one guy who his whole identity was about being against the Glazers, and then three or four years later, I found out he'd applied to work at Manchester United, and I just thought, people can be odd sometimes. And then in Vigo this year, I know a couple of lads who went up to the Glazers and had a right go at them, and I know other people who went up to them and asked for pictures. Now it was queer as folk, as they say. So if someone is interested in your book, maybe they don't know so much about Manchester United, about FC United, because we've got people listening to this all around the world, why should they buy it? Why would it be of interest to them?
It tells the story of what happened with the club from sort of 99 onwards with after the Murdoch bit. There's not much football in there, to be honest. It's all about the support of the pitch, the political shenanigans, financial issues. So, I mean, if people are interested in that, then it's the background to what... They can get the football news anywhere, any paper, YouTube, watch the videos. But it's all about how issues that would affect United support, possibly without even some people realising, in terms of price rises. I'm sure there's people out there who wouldn't even know about the Glazers financing and why they put the ticket prices up and all the rest of it. But there's plenty of intriguing stuff in there. I think, you know, we went out of Roy Keane's house on one occasion, asked him to play for FC after Fergie binned him off.
Did he know you were Roy?
Well, I didn't play earlier. So at first he was sort of glaring at us, thinking, what are you dicks doing on my doorstep? But he mellowed about after 20 seconds or so. You saw a look in his eye, and I don't know whether he saw the flick of recognition, perhaps of me, or maybe Andy Walsh, who was with. I don't know, but his whole attitude changed, and he had a bit of a loss of us, and he's quite funny.
I can remember Roy Keane asking who you were in Rio in 2000. Who's JP? I don't know if you'd written something about him in Red Issue.
I know what that was about. I went down to the hotel station. I was a bit after, but he'd already left, so probably just as well.
Why? Because you could have got battered by Roy Keane.
Don't be daft.
You mentioned
that day. Him and Nicky Butt had been paragliding, hadn't
they? They had, so, yeah.
The thing he wasn't to know, they'd seen stuff and gone paragliding. Is it paragliding? Or
yeah, yeah.
Doing some sort of gliding.
Yeah.
Parasailing, maybe.
No, it was gliding. They went off the top of the cliff behind the Hotel Intercontinental where they're at. And you mentioned Andy Walsh there. What's your relationship like with Andy now? Because you were both integral to the formation of FC United. I'd assume that you used to be friends with Andy. And from an outsider's perspective, it seems to have all gone quite acrimonious.
Which is obviously a shame, but... I mean, it was Andy who the main person I started questioning what he was up to. And the whole story of it is all in the book, of how things went. But yeah, it's a shame because he was a good friend, he was someone I trusted. And that's why when it did all start coming out about what was happening at FC, I was getting a lot of sticks for that. And so causing a stir, suppose, in that grill, as people saw it at the time. All right, not a lot of people see it that way now, but it's not an easy thing to do that, to stand up and go against someone who's got all this huge backing amongst the club's membership. Because, I mean, by that stage, it was 10 years after the club had been set up. Most people didn't know me. I was well off the radar, so, and then I'm going against a guy who's taking all the credit, he's in all the newspapers, he's stood on the pitch against Benfica with the mic doing a speech. So he's the great hero for everyone. He's delivered this ground, but, well, wasn't quite like that behind the scenes, so, and that's, people don't like that point being pointed out, but Andy Walsh certainly didn't like it being pointed out. So, yeah, there's no relationship there anymore, but yeah, life goes, sometimes things move on.
In the early days, Andy did a lot of good for FC, no?
Yeah, of course he did, but Jimmy Savile raised a lot of money for charity.
But you can't compare it. You can't compare Andy with Jimmy Savile.
I'm not comparing it to Jimmy Savile.
So it's just a relationship which soured and then became acrimonious, and then you started pointing out things that you were thinking that he was doing wrong, and it broke down from there. But you feel that with a new board at FC, things might start to right themselves and things could look good. I noticed the last two results were decent, and a win at York on Saturday was on Bank Holiday Monday was a great result. And I also had a look around some of the forums. There was a huge swing with them two wins. It went from like asking for the manager to be out to saying, well, actually we're doing all right at this level. So do you still go to FC? You're going to be going to games this season?
Yeah, I'm sure. I've not gone as much by any means in recent years. I've been away quite a bit, but I went to York actually. Quite a lot of people made a day out of it in the sun on Bank Holiday Monday.
How many would FC take now to York? How many were there on Monday?
I think it was about 600. It wasn't a big following by any means, but you know, it was decent for the situation the team's been in. I don't think many people gave the team much hope of coming away with a draw, never mind a win. But yeah, it was a good day out. I've not been to York since 2000, so it's a nice little place to go, isn't it?
And taking 600, there's teams in League One who would struggle to take 600 fans, so the support definitely seems to be there as well. Hope your book goes well. It's Red Rebels, The Glazers and the FC United Revolution by John Paul O'Neill. It's published by Yellow Jersey Press and it's out on the 21st of September 2017, and it's priced at $14.99. Thank you for your time, John Paul.
Thanks, Andy.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right Rug.